No. Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the Nomide Podcast. As always, my name is Mitch Maxine, and I haven't changed my name recently. If you have any comments or questions, please send them to the Nomide Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or drop me an email at nomidepodcast2021@gmail.com. Okay, guys, let's go around the table real quick. Len, you've been to Thailand. Muay Thai training camp, man. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. I missed you guys, and I was actually listening to you while you were away, and I was there screaming at my media device going, I've got points to say on that, so it's good to be back.
Bob, what's going on?
Lenny, Muay Thailano. That's I'm learning Spanish. But also, look, I wanted to say, it's not that women can't do martial arts.
Uh-oh.
It's just that... Okay, that's the end. I just wanted to say something vaguely sexist, because I've been saying vaguely racist things, so I just wanted to say something vaguely sexist. And Hi, you guys. Everything's... It's good to see you. No, I'm not seeing you.
I'm hearing you.
It's good to hear you, and let's go.
I'd like to edit one podcast without having to go through a whole, emotional turmoil over the shit Bob says before we even start talking about the topics.
But I kind of like being the guy you have to edit, decide whether you have to edit. Sorry, that's just me, I guess.
We all carve our little places out in the universe, I suppose. Darren, what's going on, man?
I was agreeing with Mitch there. It seems like it's been a while, but I think it's... Did we not do one last week, or was it the week before?
It was the week before.
Yeah, when was it?
Okay, so it's been 2 weeks. So yeah, the two weeks seems like 2 months. Like, it's a large gap there.
It's been a while since the four of us.
Lenny, you haven't been on the last two episodes, right? Holy
That's
cow.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I've missed you.
We love you too, Len. Oh, sorry, did I go too far? okay, so tonight, folks, we're going to tackle the last of the Pentaveret. No, there's only four of us. Darren came up with the questions for tonight, so we're going to go through Darren's questions. Darren, since they're your questions, you want to say anything before we get started?
Yeah, I think it was a reflection on every one of us and probably most people who train to any kind of high degree or even just pushing themselves. It doesn't have to be high quality, just to take it seriously and push yourselves. And definitely any professional fighter and as well as professional athletes, since this is MMA, we're talking about fighters. Tend to train and put their body through things that your body probably shouldn't have gone through. So I just remember reflecting one day, my knees are shot, my shoulders shot, lots of times your neck shot, and these are things that'll follow you forever, not things that you'll just do a bit of physio and they'll heal. And Lenny and I are always talking back and forth because his ankle's wrecked or something else is wrecked and he has to go to physio. And I remember looking back and thinking, is it actually worth all the trauma we put our bodies through for what we're getting out of it in today's standards? Like, it's fine if you're competing at a high level and you want to put your body through that, or you are constantly in fights because of your neighborhood or your profession or something like that. But just for the actual art of training and enjoyment of training, is it worth putting your body through that for what you, in the end, get out of it? And that was kind
of
the main
shit to say about this.
Yeah, that was kind of the main talking point. And there's several subtexts or subjects below that. But I think that was an opening thing which got me on it. And I know from talking to all you guys in the past, we've all suffered ridiculous injuries, and not necessarily an injury that occurs by accident in a class or a competition, but long term injuries that stem from the way we trained. And that was the whole thing, was it worth it? And if you went back, would you do it the same way again?
So let's start wandering down this conversational minefield. So the first talking point, and we'll go around the table once and let's start with Bob. Do you think that it was necessary to have put your body through all of the trauma that you did over the years in the name of the education or the learning that you were going through at the time?
Necessary, no. Desirable, abso-fucking-lutely. a saying keeps going through my mind whenever I think about this topic. You remember most fondly that which was most difficult. You look back on those things that were traumatizing to your body or your mind. And those are the things, if someone says, are you proud of what you've done? You look back and you say, you're fucking right. I did this and I did that and I put myself through that. There's no getting past this. It's the ultimate overruling for I don't know, for me, for people. I don't know how overarching this is over the human race, but it is an amazing and fascinating aspect of psychology, I believe.
You know what's interesting? Just a quick interjection. That wasn't the answer I was expecting from Bob at all. So I agree with him. I'm actually happy to hear that. But okay, that's not what I was expecting.
There's an important point I want to make here. One is the type of trauma that Bob's talking about are individual instances of physical challenge. I think what Darren's question speaks to are the things that might not be so difficult in the moment, but lead to long-term physical debilitation. For instance, but let's split those up. Let's talk about things like the way that in our club we did long, low, torquing on the knee front stances. It didn't bother me when I started, and it didn't bother me for the 20 years after that. Now, my knees are fucked, and I'm convinced it's because of those front stances that they are fucked. So
That's a great point, especially if you think it was unnecessary or undesirable to do that. If you don't think it contributed to your technique or ability, then absolutely, you're right. Why do it, or why teach it, or why... Absolutely, look back with regret on doing that stuff, but it's the stuff that you did think was valuable, and you sacrificed your body for it, that it's much easier to.
You know,
I think the very first subtext was: are there more efficient and less, say, injury-prone ways to instill and build character? Do you know what I mean? So it's like what Mitch just said about. What Bob was talking about, where it's the individual things that built character or you overcame or was painful at the time, but it's not going to do your body detriment later.
You don't want to take a hammer to your finger just for the sake of the pain and the trauma.
Like if you take, I remember people, I think Jason was one of them if he's on next week, going through that thing where you tried to toughen your knuckles up. So punching macawari boards, punching sand, all that kind of stuff. And his knuckles were hugely calloused. So they're all powerful and all callous knuckles, but I don't think he was ever in a fight. So that was perfectly ridiculous to put your body through that trauma.
I don't agree. I don't know, man. One of my favorite experiences was Makiwara stuff.
Oh, that's enjoyment. I'm not talking about the enjoyment of it. I'm saying, was there a purpose to it?
The practicality of the
benefits. I got to tell you, man. Yeah. Let's separate out exactly what we're talking about. Are we talking about the way that individual techniques are performed that can cause long-term injury? Or are we talking about individual moments or training practices that have practical purpose that don't... How do I phrase this? Darren, you remember you took us running in the sub-zero temperatures?
I was thinking about that too.
Just so everyone knows what we're talking about, years ago, it was one of the coldest nights of the year, and Darren took the class. Darren was doing the warm-up, blah, blah, blah. He took us for a run in bare feet around a very large city block. It was about minus 25 degrees Celsius that night. And we ran around this huge city block. We got back into the dojo. He immediately put us all into a horse stance. So not only did we run around on this concrete surface for, I don't know, I can't remember how long it was, but it was a long run. But when we got back into the dojo, we were put into a horse stance where you're gripping the floor and purposely pushing the blood away from your feet by virtue of the contraction of the muscles in your feet. So most of us got frostbite as a result of that. Now, there was no long-term damage. Nobody suffered any long-term...
Hang on. I think the class action lawsuit is about to be resolved on that.
But my point is, there was no long-term injury suffered. And I tend to look back fondly on that. So that's an example of something that happened in the moment. Was it a good thing? And this speaks to Bob's point about exactly, how you look back on those things fondly. I do. I look back on that fondly for a lot of reasons. So do we want to talk about those kinds of examples? What specifically here are we talking about? Training habits that carry on to long-term debility?
Yes.
Or disability?
Yes.
Let's talk about one of the points that both you and Bob have already talked about. Let's talk about Makiwara training. And for those who might be listening that don't know what that is, it's basically doing strikes, punches, kicks, hand techniques, foot techniques against a wooden plank that is traditionally wrapped with hemp. And it gives you it gives you a lot of resistance to the techniques that you're doing. So let's talk about that specifically.
That's one of my favorite things in the world in martial arts. If I look back on my whole thing, doing reverse punches on a Makiwara was one of my favorite things to do. Did it ever benefit me in any situation? No. But God damn it, I loved it. And there's nothing, I claim there's nothing wrong with that. Anyway, go ahead. Oh, and it didn't damage me. You build up the calluses. So, yeah, as far as dividing the issues between what damages you and what doesn't, this one doesn't, and I love it, and there you are.
Lenny, you've said nothing so far. What do you think?
I've just been listening. See, if I'd been asked this question 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, I would have had a whole different perspective because, as we said at the start of the podcast, I was in Thailand for a week, and I got to see UFC pros train. I got to see kids train, ladies train, and beginners, intermediate, advanced, all in different disciplines. Watching the way they all trained, it was absolutely grueling and punishing. And I stood back, particularly when you watch the young kids. We went to a fight night over there, and you're looking at 8 and 9 year old kids going in, full blast elbows to the head, kids with nerve damage to the face, and you're sitting there going, is this necessary? Whereas before, I would have been hardcore. The harder the better, the more punished we are, the better workout it was. But that's purely a satisfaction thing rather than a necessity thing. My mind is in a whole lot of turmoil over what's the best approach. You know, I know Kavanaugh, who's McGregor's coach, and a few other, he always has the things that if you damage the hardware, you're going to damage the software. So he doesn't believe in heavy sparring or hard contact or anything too excessive in terms of those training ethics. He always preaches that. He doesn't do hard full contact stuff in a run-up.
But where do you draw the line? How do you know?
This is the bit that messes with my head. Well, where do you draw the
line? The thing is, modern-day coaches draw the line at that stuff. Like most UFC guys, especially when they get older, you see all kinds of affirmations where they're talking and they say, I've learned to train smarter. Back in the day, we just pushed ourselves to the limit because we thought that's what we had to do. But now we train smarter. And they're still up there. They're still in the top 10 in the world. But they train smarter.
Yeah, there was no sports science back in our day.
Fair enough. You train smarter, but you still train as hard. Like, you still, push yourself, but in more intelligent directions. That's
exactly.
But Lenny made a delineation that I want to talk about for a second. Lenny said there's the personal satisfaction of doing it, and there's the practical reason for doing it.
That's a good point.
And frankly, I think the personal satisfaction of doing it outweighs the practical reason. Because look, I've been training since I was in my early 20s. I'm now 60. I'm pushing 40 years doing this. I very rarely, except when I was a bouncer, gotten into any kind of physical altercation. So as I age, the likelihood of me having a practical outlet for this gets lower and lower and lower. But that doesn't mean that I don't get personal satisfaction out of standing in front of a Makiwara and just going to town on it for 45 minutes. So I tend to think that the personal satisfaction, regardless of the physical impact it has on you, is more valid a reason than the practical side of it.
But then again, you were complaining today about your knees to me.
There's a difference, though, between, there's a good way to work a Makiwara and there's a bad way to work it. And the bad way will cause long-term damage if you do it wrong, like anything. Let's delineate between doing the things that you want to do properly you can let, and you just made the point yourself, you can do it properly and do it as hard as you can, or you can do it wrong and do it as hard as you can. And obviously doing it properly will reduce the long-term impact on your body. If I can work out as hard as I did in a low front stance with my foot turned in, I can work out just as hard in a slightly higher front stance with my foot not turned in to take the torque off my knee. I don't think I would have sweated any less. I don't think I would have worked any less diligently.
I'm absolutely a fan of what you're saying.
Right. Okay. So what do you think, Len, Darren, you guys? What?
Hang on. Me.
Oh, my God. I'm not sure, but I think Bob wants to say something.
There's still...
This is why I've said nothing.
There's still
I'm scared.
An aspect of, how did you wreck your knee so you can't really walk well anymore? Oh, there's an element of pride when you say, I did a round kick, 20 years ago, and it really didn't go well.
No, there isn't.
We got...
We
just have to take that into account.
But there isn't. There may have been... At a younger age, I used to do them so hard, I just blew out my own knee. That's a young, stupid person's perspective. But from an older, less stupid person's perspective, I would happily go back and change all of... Look, I think I could have accomplished the same things in the martial arts that I have without screwing my knees and my shoulders and my elbows. I think this comes back to work smarter. Not necessarily not, like, the saying is work smarter, not harder. I don't agree with that. Work smarter, but just work just as hard. But work hard being smarter.
All right, I just want to introduce this. I just want to interject. You've kind of thrown yourself into demonstrations to the point where you injured yourself unnecessarily.
No argument.
Is there no psychological part of you that says, I'm proud of that?
There was. There for a long time, there was. Now, not the, all I can do is look back and go, how stupid were you? Like, look at the pain you're in now. What did you accomplish that you couldn't accomplish if you hadn't done it smarter? And
okay, good point. Now,
the answer is nothing. Go ahead. The answer is nothing.
Hang on. You're breaking demonstrations. Are you glad that you did them?
I suffered no long-term debilitation from that.
But if you had,
but I
would
didn't.
That change it? Like
how can I speculate on that?
Because you're proud. Part of you is proud you did it.
Part of me is glad I did it. I'm not sure the word proud figures into it, but
fair enough.
Okay, yeah.
If there was some physical damage, or if there wasn't, does that make a difference to how glad you were you did it?
If there was some physical damage, I did it wrong. The thing is, I worked, and it doesn't matter. I worked a long time and looked into a lot of different sources to find out how to break properly. How should I be doing these breaks? It wasn't like I just said, hey, I'm going to break this thing and hit it real hard and hope for the best. I learned how to punch properly. I learned how to do the breaks properly. And I'm glad I did, because if I hadn't, I could have seriously injured myself. But I didn't. So it's very hard for me to look back and go, well, if I had hurt myself to the point where I was suffering long-term repercussions, how would I feel about it? I imagine I'd feel the same way as I feel about the repercussions I did suffer. I imagine I would think, I could have done that a lot smarter, and I was stupid to do it the way I did.
But proud nonetheless, or glad nonetheless.
I don't know why you hang your hat on that. I take no pride in the stuff I did that injured myself. I regret it. I regret every part of it. And
I'm not sure about that. I really... Anyway,
Bob apparently is reading my mind, so...
Yeah. You and I have argued this for long enough. Let's get Darren in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just thinking, I remember, and I feel foolish now saying it, but I remember doing demos, falling spectacularly, and I remember the head instructor saying, you need to break fall, and I'm like, I am break fall, and he said, no, you're not, you're just throwing yourself on the ground, and I said, no, but I'm not injuring myself, and he goes, not now, but you will injure yourself later, and I laughed, because I was young, And I remember thinking, no, it looks good the way I do it this way. If I do a professional break fall, it's going to look like it was planned and I broke the fall. I want to make it look realistic. And there was no injuries for however many years I was doing demo. And he said, you watch, after a couple of years. And 5 years in, I was still arguing the point saying I'm grand. And now I realize he was 100% correct.
Right, exactly.
I was falling wrong, and now I feel stupid, and I've suffered hernias and ridiculous shit afterward. Here, but going back, would I do it again? Yeah, I'd do it again, because I'm an idiot. But, so, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's not a pride thing, but at the time, it's hard to tell someone that's so deeply into something that you have to do it a different way.
Look,
to avoid injuries. Like, you just don't know any better.
I agree, and just to throw a quick story in there, I remember I was up at the club on a Saturday, and we were doing demo stuff, and Mark Bell pulled me aside, and he said, I'm telling you right now, if you continue to train the way you're training, you are going to be seriously debilitated by the time you're 50 or 60. And I didn't disbelieve him. I believed him, but at the time I said,
I didn't care.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I love how I'm training and I want to do this. That was the stupidest. I can't imagine the stupidity that went into that statement at the time, but it's not stupidity. It's youthful hubris. You're young. You think you're indestructible, man. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to keep training. And if I knew then what I know now, that's what this all comes down to.
And that was Len, that was one of the questions too. Like,
yeah, exactly. Len, what do you think, man? I missed that sound. There it is.
I've always been. Darren's come to my class. Miss, you were in my class. We've always been beast mode as much as we can. You know, without actually breaking anybody up. And it harks back to what Bob said: is where do you draw the line? I mean, okay, we all have. It's sparring. It's I'm not saying it's an ego thing, but when you spar, you're there because you want to win. So there is a little bit of the medal of honor on the chest if you do win, and if you have to take a few knocks to get that, it's gonna. Yeah, I've got that. But are they necessary? I don't know. Like Darren has, it's in his point there, and are more efficient and less intrusive ways to build character and still learn how to defend yourself. Absolutely. We're kind of rewriting the book of what we've all been taught, because every single one of us seems to have come up through fairly, not say brutal.
No, brutal's a good
way. Brutal's a good way.
Okay, brutal. So yeah. And I still have people come to my class and say, Jesus, that was brutal. Without telling worse, I stood in a class last week where a guy stood at the very start of the class and said, oh, I see a new face here. This is very advanced and very tough physically. You might want to rethink this. And I said, I'll give it a go. And 1 hour later, I stood there and I was going, was that it?
See,
is that the most?
See, that's the kind of pride I'm talking about. If you look, if I ask you, look back on your martial arts career and tell me about not traumatic, not painful, hugely challenging things you went through.
Oh, but that's a different question.
No, wait, no. Ask me. Hang on. You'll remember just about every one of them. And if I ask you, go through those experiences where you were proud of yourself, it'll be more difficult. We look back on the things that shaped us, and the things that shaped us are the difficult things, are the really hard things.
But I'm going to come back to the point that the individual things that we did, my black belt grading, I look back on that admittedly with a great deal of pride. It was 3.5 hours of nonstop. I don't want to go into it, but it was the most physically challenging single thing I've ever done in my life. And I still look back on it with a certain amount of pride that I managed to get through it successfully. However, the kind of challenges, Bob, that I think you're talking about are not the kind of challenges that lend themselves to long-term disability. The kind of things that lend themselves to long-term disability are logistically illogical technique, like doing the front stances with the knee turned in and the foot turned in and torquing the knee. It doesn't hurt you for a year or two or three, but over 30, yeah, your knees are going to get screwed. Do I feel any pride that I did those front stances like that for so long? Absolutely not. So there are things I look back on with pride that were physically challenging, no doubt. But the things that caused me the disabilities that I'm suffering now are things that I would change in a heartbeat if I could go back and know then what I know now.
Here, let me go on about that. The other thing is you've got to remember that the four people in this discussion went through difficult and challenging things, and that's what we base stuff on now. I've been to gradings at many different clubs and looked at them and thought, what the fuck did I just witness there? And yet those people walk away with a sense of pride because they forced themselves to do things they weren't used to. So they're walking away with a sense of pride. It took them a lot of effort to get that grading because that was the standards they came up with. So it still goes back to they are walking away. They're happy. They're prideful. They managed something that they achieved that took a lot of effort, and they suffered no injuries, nothing beyond that. It's having a baseline, or as you guys said earlier, where do you draw the line? I think you could draw it a lot less than what we went through. We just know we went through it, and that's what we're basing our line off of. But if you trained practically from the start, and it was still difficult, and it was still hard training, but it wasn't ridiculously hard training, you're still going to be in shape. You're going to be in top physical condition. You might even be a great martial artist. There's no injuries. There's no... Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, but I...
Like, it's all relative. If you're at a club that's not as hard as the ones we trained at, but that's all you know, and it's hard for you, and you go up through the ranks, you still achieve stuff, and that's going to be
on
your mind.
That's the end of objective standards and the start of meism and...
But Bob, think about this.
Sliding scale of rank.
But think about this for a second. We went through what we went through coming up through the ranks. I think we'll all agree that the modern crop of martial artists generally don't go through what we went through. Is it fair then to say that the generation prior to us went through worse than what we went through? And the generation prior to them went through worse what they went through?
Like, I can't speak to that at all. All that comment brings to mind for me is veterans from wartime. They went through the most excruciatingly traumatic events that we can possibly imagine. They were permanently debilitated because of it, and they look back on it with more pride and self-worth about what they did than it's possible for us to conceive of.
I'm pretty sure if you asked them if they had to go back and do it again, would you avoid the war? They'd say yes.
That's a tough one, man.
That's a really good point.
That's a great question.
That really is. So, would you have skipped that whole World War II thing?
No, because I'm proud of those people that I fucking knocked off.
Right, but the things that I went through, that's the point. The things that they went through, they would not want to take back. If they survived.
Let's go once around the table. We'll start with Lenny because he's being suspiciously quiet through all this.
Yeah, what's the deal? It's that Thailand experience.
He's still.
But Bob, you're not far from the truth there because I looked at there's a whole podcast. I have come home from this place and every single basis and every standard of martial arts I've ever witnessed and trained with, and I've sat for the last week and thought, Jesus. There's so much I want to change and so much I don't want to change.
That's another podcast.
Okay, I am officially putting a moratorium on the phrase "that's another podcast." We say it like 9 times every time we do a podcast.
If you do that, then we have to talk about it on this podcast, and there goes the topic.
I suppose a lot of it boils back to if we all had a degree in hindsight, it'd be fantastic. Because at the time, we knew no different. And it was the way things were done. And as we said earlier on, there was no sports science. There was no better knowledge of anatomy. So we trained what we were taught was best practice for the time. Next year, there might be something else. Another year,
I would argue that. I mean, I don't think we trained in what we thought was best practice. I think we trained in what we were told by our head instructor.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, sorry. Let me rephrase that. I think we were instructed in what our instructors thought was best practice at the time. You know, we knew no different. So would I do things differently? Looking back, I would. But if I hadn't the knowledge of what I know today, which is the whole hindsight thing, I don't think I would. I think I would do it.
Look, why do Makiwara training at all? Like, it just traumatizes
your
knuckles.
It feels good.
No, it hurts. I'll go out.
I've never done.
I love McAwara training.
Ever.
It's one of my greatest. Okay, let's not talk about how the extremities are.
If it's a soft tree.
Yeah, it's a pine tree. It's fine. Let's not talk about how stupid I am. Let's just focus the conversation a little bit. So here's the question I want everyone to answer. Armed with what you know now, do you regret how you trained coming up through the ranks over the years?
Straight answer for me, no.
And I got to be with Len. I don't regret it either. I would change a lot if I could, but overall, with what I know now, I don't regret it. Bob.
Oh, man, that's a hard question, man.
I don't know. Len and I didn't seem to have any problem with it.
It was a straight no.
Like, would you even have started in the same martial art? Like, that's in the...
No, I wouldn't have, but that's a different question.
What's the question again?
Knowing what you know now, big picture perspective, do you regret how you trained coming up through the ranks?
Oh, not a bit.
Right. Okay, Darren?
No. I think what it was is, no, but you know, you have these moments, not an epiphany, but just these moments, like especially when you're injured and you can't train at all. And right. You're sitting back going, why? Like, I can't train because of this. And you just feel sorry for yourself. And then you start pontificating, what if I had done this different? And I think that's where it all stemmed from. But once again, like listening to everybody's comments in the podcast, my opinions are starting to change. And it would definitely be a flat out no. Like, I would do it all again the exact same way. If I could say to the head instructor, there's no point pointing our foot in. Like, that doesn't do anything.
Right.
I would change those little things. But
right.
As far as putting your body through the trauma, yeah, I'd end up doing
that's
it.
That's
I'm still doing it. In fairness, I still do. I go up to Lenny's Club and I still fucking do it. And I know it's not right. I know it's going to hurt me.
I do it too. Jason's in town and he was up at the club on Tuesday and he comes up and he and I are sparring and I don't want to pretend that we were going full contact because we weren't. The point being, Jason and I were going pretty hard and I loved every second of it and I suffered some injury because of it and I don't regret that even a little bit. So
what if they were permanent, then your attitude would change.
Probably would, but they weren't permanent. They were the little bumps and bruises.
See, that's not fair. You can't tell when an injury is going to be permanent.
That's true. You can't.
You take that risk every time you step in the ring.
Well, depends who you step in the ring with, but yes.
Oh, yeah, me. Hello.
Can I just say something here? I got a text from Jason the other day, and this was a direct quote. Mitch and I kicked the shit out of each other last night. I got a shiner. He's not going to be walking very well today.
And he wasn't. I can testify to that.
Yeah, I wasn't walking very well today. But see, I love that because he and I thought we threw pretty hard. Like, we were going pretty good at each other. And I loved every goddamn second of it. Look, after all this talk about, we went so hard, maybe we regret it. At the end of the day, I love working out hard. I love working out challenging in a challenging format. And I think that today's crop of martial artists are being criminally robbed of that experience.
That's the basis of my whole gut reaction to
this
topic.
Right. I think we can give them that experience without the long-term knee damage and shoulder damage.
Yeah, minimize it.
Right.
But let it happen.
But it's look, if you work out hard, there's going to be some physical repercussion. There's just no getting around. Exactly, right.
Sport.
It's like Mike Chapman used to say, we're not baking cookies, right? You're going to, you get in the ring and you start throwing and you work out that way.
What about the cookies I baked with Mike Chapman? You're putting that whole episode. Oh,
now I got to live with an image of Bob and Mike Chapman baking cookies together.
Oh, is that what they call it?
They were good cookies, Darren.
Time to put the cookies back in the oven.
Who put the cookies in the cookie jar?
So let's jump to the second part of the first talking point, because this is an interesting take.
Well, in fairness, we incorporated 2 and 3 in there. I was just reading over them, and we incorporated a lot in there.
Fair enough. So. But But let's ask this question. Do you think that the challenges that you overcame, let's put it that way, do you think that your training methodology relative to the damage that you suffered made you any better relative to your ability, relative to your skill?
Can you say that in layman's terms?
Do you think the trauma made you any better skill-wise? Your words.
I don't know about skill-wise.
No. Not skill-wise.
Just attitude-wise. Just
Okay, but I'm gonna make this comment. Attitude equals skill. Your perspective equals how good you are going to be or how good you potentially could be or how good you get. So look, the trauma you suffered, if that made you better intellectually or it made you better mentally, if it focused you, that's going to end up with you being better skill-wise. So I'm going to have to answer yes to that question.
Okay.
I got to say yes as well, because I mean, from a personal point of view, I was a swine for dropping my right hand. And what made me better at that was I kept getting smacked in the side of the head. And I became better skilled at keeping my mouth open and avoiding that and slipping to the
If you're ever fighting Lenny.
Not anymore. Not anymore. I hasten to
Nothing
add.
Makes you better than getting smacked in the side of the head over and over.
Exactly. So, yeah, it improves your skill. You know, repetition is the mother of perfection. So,
okay. This is a good question, and it's part C to Darren's first talking point. Do you think that there were a lot of people who could have enjoyed a lifetime of training in the martial arts but quit because it was so hard or because they got unnecessary
injury? That's a good one.
That's not even a yes or no. Like, well, it is a yes or no question, but it's basically a yes. We can argue different points, but it's fucking 100% yes.
But here's...
Wait a second. This directly contradicts what everybody's been
saying. No, it contradicts our enjoyment of it. But not the average person that just wants to train and enjoy martial arts. They don't want to punch a Makuhari board. They don't want to go hardcore. Okay. They don't want to walk away with shiners. They're just happy people that enjoy martial arts.
Fair enough, but they're missing out.
They could always go to Dillman's Club or something.
The thing is, I know for a fact, I can name without even trying hard, at least three or four students that I've trained with over the years who I have injured because of my hardcore perspective and who quit specifically because I went too hardcore. And I torture myself about that all the time. It's not unreasonable to think that I robbed these people of a lifetime of satisfaction in the martial arts because I was so hardcore with them too early in their training.
Were you teaching the class?
Fair enough, but...
Slow down. Wait. Were you teaching the class?
It doesn't matter.
What I'm thinking is I've been in classes, let's say where I was injured. So I'm not even teaching the class and I'm injured. And I'm blaming the instructor of that class because if he was paying attention and instructed people properly, I wouldn't have got injured. So
let me give you an example and we can talk about this specifically. Mark Bell was running the class and we know this exercise. Everyone's in a circle around the person in the center.
Yeah.
And each person around is assigned a number and they have to step in with a particular attack and the person in the middle of the circle has to defend. There was a white belt who was there. I was black belt at this point. And the attack was a punch to the face. Mark Bell called his number. This individual stepped in. I performed a sidekick. I hit him in the ribs, cracked his ribs, and that was it. We never saw him again.
Yeah, that was inappropriate.
Thank you. And I don't mean that sarcastic.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Like that's on me. That's on me. Like that's nothing to do with the exercise.
But in fairness, that's an accident. That's not you trying to better against the white belt or apply your discipline on him. That was an accident.
I disagree, Darren.
I disagree too.
No, a black belt.
You should, but it was still an accident.
The situation.
An unforgivable accident.
Well, wait a sec. What's the point here?
The point is I went hardcore on somebody who wasn't ready for it and should not have had to be subjected to it. I don't know the extent of the injury. I assume I just cracked his rib. A month later, he was fine. But the point being, intellectually, he was like, fuck this. I don't want to be a part of this. And this feeds directly into Darren's question. The trauma you suffer coming up through the ranks, whether at your hands, your instructor's hands, or the people you're working out with, isn't there some level of accountability, not only for ourselves, but for the people we train with, to rein in that level of trauma, that level of hardcore training.
Fair enough. But a black belt kicking a white belt in the ribs is a lot different from the typical situation where you're with somebody intermediate and you're trying to bolster their enthusiasm, their machismo, their toughness.
Fair enough.
Entirely different situation.
But I'm just answering the question, which was, do you think a lot of people who could have enjoyed a lifetime of learning in the martial arts, but they quit because they got unnecessarily injured? And
well,
an example
if they're in
of
front of you,
didn't.
Yeah.
All right, I'll be signing off. And all right, so let's talk about that. Do you think that we, as the people who are advocates of this kind of hardcore training, and I'm not talking about my example, obviously that was just irresponsibility, I'm not talking about that. Let's talk about responsibly trying to impart a hardcore training perspective on students. How many students do you think got chased away? Do you think that that's a consideration?
This is a great topic because like everybody wants to be an MMA champion. And few are willing to go through the physical stresses in order to do it. And where do you gauge your student body? Like Lenny, how many of your students are hardcore and how many don't want to be hardcore? And how do you treat the difference?
I think it's fair to say that most of the kids don't want to be hardcore.
Sure. Let's talk about adults.
Most of the people in my adults class are there because we train hardcore, I suppose, the best way to put it. And some of them want to go even harder.
But?
So go ahead.
Like, I've seen people come and go in the hardcore classes. There's lots of people that don't want to train hardcore. They're up at the club, but they stop going to the Thursday classes because it's too hardcore.
True, valid point.
So it's like if you want to instill, this isn't a knock on you by any means, but I'm saying if you want to MMA training on all your students, but you're making it so difficult that only a select few show up to the class, you know, do you want to let everybody do it, or do you want to really just teach the 5 to 10 hardcore people?
I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. I suppose
I know Mitch's answer on this one.
More specific when I say. Yeah, I know, man. Mitch's answer as well. But, you know, by saying hardcore, I'm not talking about going full contact and everybody fighting competition-wise. And I mean,
it's just grueling.
I mean, just a bloody good workout. It's a grueling workout. And at the end of the day, we're all amateurs. And as I say to anybody that starts getting a little bit too heavy in sparring, remember, guys, we've all got to go to work tomorrow, or the older kids got to go to college or school. So there has to be that bit of restraint. So it's not hardcore in the sense of we're trying to kill each other. It's hardcore and we're trying to push each other, if that makes sense.
I want to ask a pointed question, and I've already answered it, and I just feel like I'm alone out here on this particular tree limb, so I'm going to try and drag you guys out with me. Can you remember a point where you may have gone too hardcore on a student and might feel that you're responsible for their having left the martial arts, and how do you feel about that?
I'm lucky I haven't.
Well, Bob was never that hardcore.
Yeah, do it.
Oh,
zing! Actually, just to set the record straight, I can't think of someone more hardcore than Bob. Oh, my God.
I've got another podcast episode is fond memories of great students that we've had. And that's a huge topic. And that touches on that, and we'll do it.
Yeah,
later.
Bob was one of my students that I have fond memories of.
Oh, sensei.
Oh, fuck off. Fuck right off. What an asshole. Oh, my God. All right. So Bob says no. Len, you said yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
Care to share? No was a good answer to that.
No, it was a guy who came in with a little bit of too much ego and a bit too much swagger with no respect for anybody else in the dojo. wanted to kill everybody and started beating on younger kids and Jesus. Beating on some of the ladies. And I said, okay, you want to go hard, go hard. And he came in one night and we put him in view. And then one night I caught him as hard as I physically could into the liver and he crippled on the ground.
Oh, my God.
And it's only when he got up and I saw the look on his face, I went, the guy quit after that night. He never came back. And I felt really guilty about it. Darren, have you caused anyone to quit?
No, not directly. I remember when I was doing the grappling classes in Peterborough. Actually, not even a few. I think it was only maybe two guys quit for injuries, but it wasn't injuries that I caused. It was just injuries sustained in the training that they weren't expecting because they were all pretty much beginners. So I've never hit anybody in any sense where they quit.
See, there's another question which might lead to another podcast. Instructor responsibility. If you're running a class and someone gets injured in the class, even if you're not the one who injures them, how much responsibility should you as the instructor feel?
I watch everybody like a hawk. That's why I hate going into grappling clubs and they're not paying attention because it's so easy to get injured. I make sure you're partnered up. If you're new, you're partnered up with somebody that knows what they're doing. You know, like you can't just put two beginners together and get them to do an arm bar because somebody's going to get injured. So it's like you have to know how to run a class when you're doing that kind of shit.
All right, guys, let's take a break. Oh, have a pee, pour a drink.
Nice.
And
I've been waiting 20 minutes for this.
Bob can go and interfere with himself.
Darren's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I got to get a drink. Jesus Christ. Guess Bob doesn't need another drink. Zing! All right, taking a break, folks. We'll be right back.
Bob's laugh got further and further away as he went for the next drink.
All right, folks, we're back from the break. So getting back to the talking points, we're going to jump down a couple because Darren's right. We've kind of glossed over a few of them. But here's one I really want to, and Lenny's got a different perspective, obviously, because he runs his own dojo. But let's talk about this. If you were to open up a dojo right now, and Lenny, you obviously have a dojo right now, would you or do you train your students the same way and require them to go through the same sort of physical adversity that you went through coming up through the ranks?
Absolutely, 100% yes. But in a bit of a roundabout way, I find different ways to get the same, achieve the same goals with the same physical ends to it. Absolutely.
Found different ways. That means it's different. The question was, would you do it the same? And you just said you found different ways to do it.
Okay. Sorry. You get the same end result. Okay. Yeah. Fair point. I kind of one of these people that I'm constantly reviewing what I do and I'm constantly changing the way I do it because I look at something and say, can we do this better? Can we do it harder? Can we do it easier? If we do it easier, is it going to save them the same benefits? So I'm in a constant state of review. My fundamentals are the same, but there are variations.
You know, it's funny, Len, you talk about being in a constant state of review. I can't teach a class without going through 2 or 3 days of introspection about how well the class went and what I did that I shouldn't have done or what I didn't do that I should have done. And almost inevitably, my self-critique always comes down to how I treat the students, not what I ask of the students. So that's just me. I'm not no judgments in any direction. And this is kind of a hot button topic for me because we had a black belt grading. Kyle, he's been on the podcast before. A bunch of us from our club went up to his dojo in Ottawa to test him for his third degree black belt a number of years ago. And there was another black belt in attendance at his club. And he referred to the way that we treated Kyle as dehumanizing during his grading. And I took that quite to heart. And I often think that there's a defined difference between how a student is treated and what is asked of a student. I know we're off topic a little tiny bit. I would really be curious about what you guys think about that delineation between how a student is treated and what is asked of a student.
Oh, man.
I gotta do it.
Okay, sorry. Okay, we can go on to another question if you want.
See, I don't know if I have a unique perspective here, having gone to many different dojos and seen how they approach this, but my favorite have been the dojos where the best examples I've seen are where they teach by example and not by verbiage, where it's just expected. It's just expected of what your behavior should be. And did I answer the question? I don't think so.
Well, Bob, let me ask you this. Do you consider what is asked of a student to be a different category than how the student is treated? What I mean by that is, I think you can ask a lot of a student physically and still treat them respectfully. Okay, but that's my point, is my concern now at my age and experience is more that the students are treated respectfully. Look, I'll ask a student to jump out a window if I think that's the right thing to do for their training. I think I can do it with respect. I don't think I have to demean a student in order to accomplish
it. Oh, demeaning is not part of the vocabulary anymore. It shouldn't be.
And I think that's a really tough, that's a tough sell for a lot of instructors, especially old school instructors, because it's very hard for a lot of people to separate the notion of, I'm going to ask you to do this physical task, separating that out from demeaning them while they're being asked to do it.
The dojos that I admire the most are the ones that don't do that. They strictly show by example. They do it and ask you to do it. And if there's absolutely no dialogue, no criticism, no wording, right. No.
Okay, Bob, let me ask you. Let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
You said your favorite dojos are the ones that lead by example.
Yeah.
Does that mean that it's expected that the instructors are able and will do what the students are asked to do?
That's a great question. I'm now going to bring it around to specifics. And my favorite dojo I think I've ever worked out in was the Kendo dojo. They had a number of very elderly teachers who could not do the things they asked of their students. They had a number of world champion young instructors who I never had any interface with. To be frank, they were just there so I could watch them. And it was just expected that you do the stuff. For me, like, I joined it at 50 years old. I had been around the block many times, so I knew what the student-teacher relationship was, and I really was enthusiastic and was willing to put myself through a lot of stuff. That may color what I'm saying. The example was there, and the students were expected to follow it, and they did, to almost no exception. It was remarkable what I saw there. Anyway, I don't know if I'm wording this well, but that's my impression.
There's several interjections there. Like one, and Lenny could attest to this, having just recently trained in Muay Thai, it's a well-known fact that the trainers in Muay Thai are so adept at training. They're training champions. They may have been a champion at one time, but they're certainly not champions now. And some of the best instructors never were champions. They're just really, really good at training a champion. So they cannot really lead by example because they're not capable of doing it, but they can very well train you to do it.
It's like Burgess Meredith in Rocky.
Exactly, yeah,
so,
good point.
Okay, but let's understand something, that if we're willing to concede that there are trainers and instructors who are not physically capable anymore, but are very good at training and instructing, they're not leading by example.
No, but they have someone that can do it.
They're leading by reputation.
Fair enough.
Or by knowledge.
Yeah, but when you walk into a dojo as a beginning student and you see an instructor there who's 60 or 70 and he's not able to do the things he's asking you to do, you don't know what his knowledge level is. You know nothing about him. There's just this old guy up there telling you to do some stuff.
Take it right to that point right now, Mitch. Just out of curiosity, Lenny aside, if I was to just start a dojo from scratch right now, so I only have white belts there, I can't lead by example. I can teach up to a certain level, but unless I get a student up to a level that can perform techniques the way they're supposed to be performed, I won't be able to teach people to do certain things that I once did or that I want the student to do, because I can't lead by example. So I'm almost saying I couldn't open up a dojo now unless I'm just taking the people to green belt level and then send them somewhere else for examples.
Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is it?
I don't know.
Is it just a thing? That's my point. That's what I'm trying to get at. Is Bob was talking about leading by example. I'm in this day and age, and especially in this culture, and I'm sorry, I can't speak to the Ireland culture. I can only speak to my little corner of the North American culture. If I were to step out and open a dojo right now, I can't do the things I used to be able to do. I can't do the things that I would ask my students to do. How can somebody who is not physically able anymore to do the things that he's asking his students to do legitimately ask his students to do those things?
But if you could open a dojo and bring along two of your best black belts with you.
No, you're saying open. You're saying open. So you have no black belts. You're opening a dojo. You would have to hire out.
What I'm making Mitch's point for him, that if he could bring a couple of stellar black belts with him, it would be so much easier.
Yeah, that's right. Legitimate.
Do we all agree, though, that somebody, well, Lenny's still, he's only 50. Fuck him.
he's a kid. Let me try to feel better about being old by saying Lenny's a kid.
Actually, I'm trying to make Lenny feel better because he's 50 and he's still
a
kid.
Great.
Yeah,
I
fuck you. You and your goddamn Louis tie. Goddamn.
There you go.
I don't realistically think I could step out on my own and open a dojo from the ground up right now, because I can't do those things.
Yeah.
Is that a legitimate concern?
It's like any business. If you could bring along a stellar black belt with you, it would be much easier.
Here's another thing. Even if you take people that can demonstrate and are well, young, and capable and everything, again, you go back to competitive MMA training, the amount of people that get into the UFC and leave their home dojo to get better training somewhere else. So the dojo has taken them to as much as they can, and now to get better training, they go elsewhere. So I think you could literally take someone up to a certain level. And if they want to go beyond that, you can recommend another club where they could go and train. But you could at least bring them, teach them the basics, get them up to a level where they can really improve. And if they're happy with that and want to continue on, that's fine. If they want to go way beyond that, then you can recommend somewhere where they can expand. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Neither do I, but it's not a question of what you're able to teach. It's a question of what incoming students are willing to believe, how much faith they have in you as an instructor to teach them. If I'm an 85-year-old guy who has been training steadily and obviously declining as my years go on, I have a wealth of knowledge. I have a wealth of understanding. But if I try to open a dojo, I can barely walk.
I can count on that.
Please.
So when I went from Vancouver back to Peterborough to do the grappling, because we were the only grappling club in Peterborough, we attracted a few guys that had previous grappling training, and one Mark Ross, who had lived in Brazil for like a couple of years and was way better at grappling than I was, and another guy that actually fought. So he came in and they're training, and he was going, well, what about this and what about that? And he had stuff that I didn't know. And he's going, well, I could teach the class. And I'm like, but you're not. Yes, you know things that I don't, but I know things that you don't. And you can't watch yourself. I can watch you and I can make you better. I can't do what you can do because I'm not fighting professionally. It's now your choice. Do you want to stay here and I will teach you things and I'll point out what you're doing wrong and we'll go from there? Or do you want to train somewhere else? It's your choice. And he chose to continue there. And Mark Ross was another one. It's like, okay, yeah, you know stuff that I don't know, but where are you going to work out? So do you want to train here and I'll watch what you're doing and you can help out and you can teach techniques and I'll teach techniques and we'll go like that. So the option is there. So I think you can still teach to the level you know, and you don't have to lead by a wicked example. You know how to do a wheel kick. You can demonstrate a wheel kick to the knee, and if the other guy's flexible, it's just a matter of lifting it up higher. So you can explain, my hips don't work, I'm going to show you how to do it properly, and you're going to do it properly, but you're just going to do it higher.
Yeah, I agree with Darren there on that one, absolutely. There's a few things at play here. Like, turn around and say there's an 85-year-old guy teaching, and will students not think any different of him because they're older? I mean, okay, we've got the benefit of having years of training in hindsight, but when did anyone ever walk through a door of a dojo and see someone with a black belt and question them straight away and think, this guy ain't up to it? Because you come in as a beginner, you just think that this guy is the guru, he knows it all. So you're going to take what he teaches you. That's gospel. You don't know if he's substandard because you're a beginner. Only by going to other clubs would you find that out, or competing. And exactly what Darren says, if they're honest enough, they'll say, hey, I can only do this much, but you guys got to do it better. And they'll be honest about it and say, look, I used to be able to kick higher. And that there's certain things that I encounter with that. There's nights my flexibility is good, there's nights my flexibility is bad. Now, I have the benefit, I've had students that come up under me all the way, and they're out there, always some of them with me, some of the younger guys. And I'll do something to a certain height, and they'll say, well, here's the higher way to do it. And they'll do it. Some students are seeing both. So if you can demonstrate the fundamentals of it correctly, then the intricacies of it is just the added bonus. If you have someone else there to show the extra bit, all the better.
Okay, any last comments before we go on to the next talking point?
I had one, and it wasn't pertaining to just that. It was something I think Bob was talking about. I'm not even sure if I can remember what I wanted to say. I was hanging there, and I was waiting to interject, and it just kept going on and on, and then the topic actually changed and never got to go back.
I know.
It was something about the hard training and the damaging training and the way people train. And my thing, my kind of synopsis or final thing on that is I've trained at clubs that were ridiculously disciplined and hardcore and probably impractical to a certain degree. And then I've trained at clubs where there's music playing and it's just fun and everybody's having a great time and they're talking over each other and it almost seems like there's no discipline whatsoever. But the workout is equally as hard. And then I was trying to decide which one I like better, and I've actually decided that I like all aspects. I enjoy going up to a club that's just hilarious, but you're exhausted at the end, and I enjoy going up to a club that's ridiculously disciplined with all the, I wouldn't say pomp and stuff, but the traditions and stuff that you have to go through. It's almost like a religion where I normally would find pointless, but I find that, I don't know the term, but I really like going up to a traditional club where I'm forced to follow the traditions right from the beginning to the end, and the workout is staunch, and nobody says a word, nobody gets a drink of water, nobody can open a window and get fresh air. It's just so disciplined, and you walk out of there, and you feel good about that. But I equally enjoy, 100% equally, the ones where there's a lot of joking and music, and you can get a breath of fresh air, and you can drink water. Getting the exact same training out of both. I'm exhausted out of both. It's just two different ways of teaching.
But Darren, I got to tell you, man, when I was in Ireland, this is going back to 2017 now, so it's been, God, 5 years ago. I know, right?
Time to go again, buddy.
I know. And I went up to Lenny's club with you and we worked out, and you were kind of giving me the rundown on what it's going to be like. You're like, oh, you know, it's a fairly relaxed workout. There's one guy who's really funny and blah, blah, blah. In my head, I'm thinking, this is going to be a waste of my time. Honestly, that's what I thought. And then we got there, and I went through the workout, and you were right. It was relaxed. There was one guy, I can't remember his name, but he was fucking hilarious. Yes.
Really?
But at the end of it, I was dead. Like, I think it's a marriage of the expectation of the instructor. And I thought Lenny was I don't want to make this too much of a fanboy moment, but I thought Lenny was really quite adept at allowing a relaxed atmosphere. Now, let's be fair. This was not a hardcore karate workout. This was a conditioning workout that incorporated martial arts techniques, probably the best way to phrase it.
Yeah.
But Lenny, I thought, was brilliant at, we're going to present this atmosphere, joking, relaxed, but we're working hard. And at the end of it, I was like, holy shit. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a workout. I've worked as hard in workouts before, but I've never enjoyed the work. I didn't know up until that point that you could actually have fun and still push yourself that hard during a workout.
Would that affect your method of teaching?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Darren's spoken a number of times on the podcast in the past about what a dick I am when I teach. Or the dick I was. And I, certainly not with any pride, but I concede that for sure.
But just to interject, that would be one of the things Bob was talking about earlier, about would you go back and do it again, or did you get something out of that? You were a dick, but when I finished that class, it's like, yeah, I made it through the class. And there was a sense of accomplishment of making it through that dick class.
But what I understand now is I could have given you that same sense of accomplishment without being a dick.
That's what
going to Lenny's class taught me.
Yeah.
See, if I could
jump in that,
which the main reason I do that on a Thursday is I've got guys who come to the Thursday class who want to do a little bit of martial arts and they want to work hard. But they don't want to get into a traditional system. They don't want to grade. They don't want to wear a gi. They don't want to wear belts. So rather than saying, piss off, you can't train with me, I try to find a middle ground. Okay, you come on Monday night, it's traditional karate. You come on Thursday night, we're going to mix it up. And you're kind of, you're keeping everybody happy then. But we still work bloody hard.
Just an interesting thing. When I was doing the grappling class at Jushin, we opened it up. Anybody that was just doing the grappling class, they had to pay a certain amount for the grappling class. Because we were just starting it out, we allowed anybody from the karate club to go to the grappling classes for free.
Yeah.
And a lot of them came for a couple classes. And the weird thing about that was I had music playing, and it was all the same way as Lenny's class. It was all just happy, clappy. We're all training hard and everything. We actually trained harder than they did in the karate classes, despite the karate classes being disciplined and all that. At the end of the day, none of the karate guys stayed in the grappling class. They were just happy doing their little karate thing and the little traditional thing. They did not want the grueling aspect of what we were doing in MMA.
Which just goes to show you that the atmosphere of the class has nothing to do with the structure and the discipline that's expected in the class.
Exactly.
I think that's a really hard balance to achieve. And I think clubs that can achieve it deserve a standing ovation, because I think that you can have that relaxed atmosphere, or not relaxed atmosphere, but not a hardcore, I'm going to be a piece of shit as an instructor, but still expect your students to work hard. That's not easily achievable. And I've seen it achieved only 2 times in my career as a martial artist. One was at Lenny's club and one was at another club in Northern Ontario that I went to a couple of years back. But anyway, Bob, what do you think about all this?
I'm wonderfully entertained by sitting back and listening to what's going on. It's absolutely fascinating, because I've never been at a club. Oh, I was at a couple of capoeira clubs where it wasn't so traditionally disciplined. And the kendo class, kendo dojo it was traditionally disciplined, but sort of in an understated way. It was sort of like, just follow along. It's not like, you follow along! It was like, just do what we're doing, and you were expected to do it. So I haven't experienced the whole myriad of dojos that these guys have. I'd like to. And I'd like to think that you can have a music. Oh, wait. One of the capoeira dojos did have music playing.
I thought that was an integral part of it.
Yeah, it is. And a fairly lighthearted sort of atmosphere. And yes, you were expected to work just as hard. It's funny, man. As a teacher, you usually teach the way you were taught. And you usually impose the discipline that you were imposed upon. So I guess that's what accounts for just about everything.
I'll tell you, I went to one of Bob's capoeira classes once.
I don't remember that.
And I'll tell you why I didn't go back. One of the exercises, just to start, and this was everybody, from beginner to advanced. I don't remember how many people were there. There were, I don't know, at least 15 people in the class. So we're running around the outside of the room, and they held a stick probably about waist high. And one of the exercises that everyone, regardless of your rank level, was expected to do was you'd reach this stick at a jog, not a full run, but you'd reach it at a jog. You were expected to jump over the stick, land on your hands with your feet in the air, push yourself back up onto your feet, and continue running around the room.
I'm out.
No, I thought every time I went over the thing, I fucking landed like a sack of potatoes. But this is my point, is doing that exercise was, it might have been rudimentary to the advanced students. It was way out of the grasp of the beginner students. And a beginner would have to have more stick-to-itiveness, more, what's the word I'm thinking of, more dedication than I had to go through that and want to come back to a second class. That exercise on its own killed my want to train in capoeira. I couldn't do it. There was no reasonable expectation that I could do it, but there was no consideration from the instructors that I couldn't do it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Did I do it?
Oh yeah.
Really?
That's probably what pissed me off is fucking Bob's dude. The thing is, look, I consider myself incredibly lucky that I've got a resource who experienced these martial arts. Look, Bob and I did a bunch of shit at the club that he was running in Toronto. We practiced capoeira a lot. We practiced not actual capoeira because I couldn't fucking do it. Like, yeah, I'll jump over the stick and land on my face. Great. But there's a particular move called a Jenga, and we did that a fair bit, and moving from that into some of the techniques. And if I ever pretended to teach a class, I can guarantee you it was with the preamble that I don't fucking know what I'm doing here, but this is just a fun thing, so let's just do it to have a laugh.
No, but you can learn a move and show somebody a move that you learned. You're not trying to profess that you're an expert in that art.
Fair enough.
I learned this cool move. I think we can apply it to what we're doing here. Let's give it a shot.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. Okay.
Concepts of...
Exactly. Yes,
concepts
of.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, I'm going to give us one last talking point. Let's go around the table. If you had to go back in your training and change one particular technique because you felt that technique caused you long-term pain or disability, which technique would you change and how would you change it?
For me, it's not... Nothing caused me long-term pain or disability. I guess it doesn't count if I say I would prefer if the technique was done a different way. All right. You're going to have to skip me while I think about it.
Darren or Len, you got one?
Zen Kutsudachi.
Mine too.
That doesn't call you... Has that caused you permanent disability?
Yes, it has.
My knees are shut.
Mine too, and I attribute it absolutely to the low, ridiculously fucked up way we did front stances.
I hate the way we do Kibidachi. I wish it was more like the fucking sumo thing.
Kibidachi doesn't bother me at all.
Really?
Front stances.
And how much do you spar or do lines in Kibidachi?
Right. And the way it's taught is... Turn this in as much as you can until it hurts.
Grip, grip the floor so that you can't actually transfer to another stance.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Bob. I'm going to take exception to what you said. Never once did someone say, turn this in until it hurts.
Kibidachi, turn it in until you can't turn it in anymore.
No, grip the floor.
There's a difference between that and turn it in until it hurts.
Is there?
Yes.
I can't turn this in anymore because it hurts.
Okay.
Yeah. No. He's kind of onto something there.
All right, Len, you got.
Can I say one more?
Darren, please.
I just think that whole. I know when you throw a punch, they say don't straighten your elbow because that'll hurt your elbow and stuff like that. But I think throwing techniques just to the air as hard as you can, regardless of whether you straighten your elbow or not.
Oh, you beat me to it, you bastard. You
sorry, okay, you go ahead. I'll stop there and you finish it. You finish it.
No, exactly that. Give me something to hit, but this fresh air target, and I'm contradicting myself here because I defended Kata a few weeks ago, but again, I've had an opinion this week.
Len's whole perspective on life has changed.
Oh, his whole brain is in Thailand right now.
Darren's got a 2-hour road trip with me tomorrow. Yeah. He's going to get the whole lot. But Darren said, throwing stuff full blast with without any physical target to hit.
Clarify this for me.
It does damage.
You know
whether
what?
You straighten your elbow or not, it does damage. If you
I'll
hit something,
you guys,
your shoulder stops. If you don't hit anything, your shoulder's getting jarred each and every time.
I'll tell you guys, of all the techniques I've done, doing techniques in the air, I can't imagine a less intrusive, painful thing.
You're not throwing them hard enough, buddy.
I'm off to Ireland tomorrow, and Darren and I are going to have words.
I have a special class.
You're going to have a lack of words.
I don't understand that. I do 1,000 techniques in the air every week. I work out alone and at the club. As long as I focus at the right point, I don't get that pain from doing techniques in the air.
I don't even understand what they mean.
I even wanted to throw in the mix. This isn't even a technique. This push-ups on your knuckles.
What?
Piss up. Push. It's not a technique, but it's consistent push-ups on your knuckles.
Lenny's saying that push-ups on his knuckles causes him long-term...
Yeah. My wrist on one side is destroyed.
What a wimp.
Oh, my God. No judgments. No judgments.
Somebody who hasn't worked out in decades says that about somebody who's working out every day.
And just got back from a week in Thailand.
I just think they're pointless. You can do 50.
You know what, Len? I'll tell you. I agree with you. I was weaned on the notion of push-ups as punishment in class, and I can't think of a more useless thing to do.
But I can't do push-ups on my palms anymore. I'd rather do them on my knuckles.
So would I. Actually, I'm in that state too. My wrists are so fucked. I can't do I literally cannot do push-ups on my palms. The only way I can do a push-up without feeling pain is to do them on my knuckles. That's not an endorsement of doing it that way.
I hear you.
Anyway,
hear you. Yeah.
Okay, folks. Once around the table, let's finish this one off.
As I kind of said earlier, when I picked up the talking points, it was kind of a low point dealing with injuries and stuff like that. And I think the podcast once again opened my eyes to realize that despite the injuries, despite what I went through, and despite the fact that I thought I would actually not do it all again, I'm thinking I would fucking do it all again. Whether that's a stupid statement, a pride statement, a vanity statement, I don't know. But I think I'm better for having gone through the bullshit. And even if it was wrong, or it could have been done differently, and I could have been a better martial artist by doing it more efficiently, I think if I had the choice to go it again, there might be a few things I'd change if I was allowed to, but that'd be hindsight. I think if I was put back in the same position, I'd do it all again. Which wasn't what I expected to think when I put down the talking points. It's not the outcome I was expecting to think.
That's a lovely sentiment, and I agree with it completely, and it really touches on an important part of psychology, I think. It doesn't matter whether what I went through was right or wrong. I went through it, and I take pride in it, and I stand by it, and little else matters, I think.
Yeah, I agree with Bob on that one, yeah.
Yeah, I think I definitely would go through it all again. But as I did, for a long time I was in Campton, this is the only way. But now I've realised that every day is a bloody school day. But that being said, I wouldn't change what I did for 1 minute.
For myself, I don't know how to make my peace with this. I can look back at individual things that happened during my training and methodologies that I was required to follow during my training that I don't think were good. I don't think were healthy. And at the same time, I have to agree with you guys. I went through it and I loved it, and I've got nothing but fond memories of it. Emotionally, I look back on my training with nothing but glorious memory of what I went through. I'm not sure I would say the same thing if I took the time to examine it intellectually. So
that's the first time you actually came around, I think, during this conversation to that point of view. And I'm gratified by it. I think we can all be gratified by our own experience in exactly that way.
I think one of the talking points was, now we didn't get to it, or maybe we touched on it, but it was with, if you were teaching a class or if you were opening a dojo, would you use the same doctrines that you grew up upon and force people to do that shit that, yes, you enjoyed or you can look back on fondly, but would you...
It'd be great to do that in a future episode.
Would you instill that into somebody else? I don't think I would, but I agree with Bob in the sense that you do take something out of that when you've gone through it. That's not saying I would push somebody else through it as an...
That's an interesting conundrum, isn't it? We all look back and go... Yeah, we all look back and go, yes, I loved it. Yes, I would. I'm glad I went through it. Would I make someone else go through it? Nope. That's...
But you would make them go through something similar. Hold on.
Lenny, go ahead and say what you were going to say.
No, I was just going to say, that's what I said earlier on when Darren, that exactly the point that made that. Do I teach exactly the same way? No, I'll achieve the same results. And for a lot of it, I'll do the same, but I'll also find ways around it because having looked back, it's like, maybe I could do that better. But they will still
difference in quantity, but not in quality. You got to make them go through the stuff, maybe in a different way, maybe in a less invasive or injurious way, but you got to make them go through the stuff.
Let's explore this more at another podcast.
Yeah.
Because I think we all agree that... No, I think we all agree that we have a very... Oh, God, I'm going to start crying again. I think we all agree that we have a very emotional connection to how we were trained. I think we trained in a way that affected us personally and affected us in a very profound way. But would we do it the same if we were teaching someone else? Maybe not. Something to explore in another podcast. So we're going to bring this one to a close, folks. Once again, if you've got any comments, questions, please send them to my personal Facebook page, the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, or drop me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Thanks so much, everybody. We're done. Bye-bye now.